Number two. In the following, what stood as a kind of preface to the first edition is reproduced in all essentials. I place it here as an appendix, not because it has anything immediately to do with the book's contents, but because it shows the mood of thought in which I wrote the book 25 years ago. Since there is a recurrent idea that I have to suppress some of my earlier writings on account of my later ones on spiritual science, I do not want to omit it altogether. Footnote. Only the very first introductory sentences of this preface in the first edition have been completely omitted. Today they seem to me quite inessential. But what is said in the rest of it seems to me necessary to say, even today, in spite of, indeed because of, the natural scientific thinking of our contemporaries. End of footnote, the author's note. Our age wants to draw forth truth only from the depths of the human being. Of Schiller's two well-known paths, our present age prefers the second. Quote, "We both seek truth, you in outer life, I within, in the heart, and thus each is sure to find it. If the eye is healthy, it meets the Creator without. If the heart is healthy, it surely mirrors the world within." End of quote, and that's from Johann Christoph Friedrich von Schiller, 1759-1805, great German dramatist, aesthetic philosopher, and critic. End of footnote. Truth that comes to us from without always bears about it the stamp of uncertainty. We want to believe only what appears to each of us inwardly as truth. Only truth can bring us certainty in the development of our individual powers. These powers are lamed in anyone tormented by doubts. In a world of riddles, people cannot find a goal for their activity. We no longer want merely to believe. We want to know. Belief demands the recognition of truths that we do not quite understand. But whatever we do not completely comprehend goes against the individual element in us that wants to experience everything in its deepest inner core. The only knowing that satisfies us is the kind that submits to no outer norm, but springs from the inner life of the personality. Nor do we want the kind of knowing that has become frozen once and for all in academic rules and preserved in compendia valid for all time. We consider ourselves justified in proceeding from our closest experiences, our immediate life, and ascending from there to cognition of the whole universe. We strive for certain knowledge, each of us in his or her own way. Nor should the teaching of science assume a form in which its recognition is a matter of unconditional compulsion. None of us would give a scientific text the title Fichte once did, quote, "a crystal clear report to the greater public on the true nature of the latest philosophy, an attempt to compel readers to understand," end quote. Today no one should be compelled to understand. We demand neither recognition nor agreement from those who are not driven to a given opinion by their own particular individual needs. We do not want to cram knowledge into even an immature human being, a child rather. We try to develop the child's capacities so that the child no longer needs to be compelled to understand, but wants to understand. I am under no illusion as to this characteristic of my time. I know how much automatism, devoid of individuality, prevails. But I am also just as aware that many of my contemporaries seek to orient their lives in the direction that I have suggested here. I would like to dedicate this book to them. It is not supposed to lead to the only possible path to truth, but to describe the path taken by one for whom truth is central. This text leads first through abstract regions where thought must draw sharp contours so as to arrive at some secure positions. But the reader is also led from arid concepts into concrete life. I am certainly of the opinion that one must also lift oneself into the ethereal realm of concepts if one is to experience every aspect of existence. Someone who knows only how to enjoy use of the senses does not really know the most delicious part of life. Oriental sages have their students first spend years in renunciation and asceticism before they share with them what they know. The West no longer requires pious exercises or asceticism to attain knowledge, but it does demand the goodwill to remove oneself for a brief time from the immediate impressions of life and enter the world of pure thought. The realms of life are many, for each specific sciences develop. But life itself is a unity, and the more the sciences busily immerse themselves in separate realms, the farther they move away from seeing the living wholeness of the world. There must be a kind of knowing that seeks in the separate sciences the elements that lead human beings back to full life again. A scientific specialist wants to become aware of the world and how it works through his or her insights. In this book, the goal is philosophical. Science itself is to become organically alive. The separate sciences are preludes to the science attempted here. A similar relationship obtains in the arts. A composer works on the basis of compositional theory, which is a sum of all that one needs to know before one can compose. In composing, the laws of composition serve life, serve reality. In just the same way, philosophy is an art. All real philosophers have been artists in concepts. For them, human ideas have become artistic materials and scientific methods have become artistic technique. Thereby, abstract thinking attains concrete individual life. Ideas become powers of life. Then we not merely know about things, but have made knowing into a real self-governing organism. Our active, real consciousness has lifted itself above mere passive reception of truths. How philosophy as an art relates to human freedom, what freedom is, and whether we do or can participate in it, this is the principal theme of my book. All other scientific discussions are included only because in the end they throw light on these, in my view, most immediate human questions. These pages are meant to offer a philosophy of freedom. If it were not aimed at heightening the value of existence for the human personality, all science would be nothing but satisfaction of idle curiosity. The sciences attain their true value only by showing the human significance of their results. The ultimate goal of an individual cannot be ennoblement of only a single capacity of the soul. Rather, it must be the development of all the capacities dormant within us. Knowledge has value only through contributing to the all-around development of the whole of human nature. Therefore, this book interprets the relationship of science to life not in the sense that human beings must bow down before the idea and dedicate their forces to its service, but rather in the sense that we take possession of the world of ideas to use them for our human goals, which extend beyond those of mere science. We must be able to confront an idea while experiencing it. Otherwise, we fall into its bondage. That is the end of the last appendix and the full end of the book, A Philosophy of Freedom, Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, by Rudolf Steiner.